Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
So we are in the second hour of the show, and we are on air now, live radio, folks, with the Michael Thomas Goodrich. I have actually had the pleasure of getting to know Mike a little bit over the past couple of years, and you know, it's really refreshing, I have to say, when you can find someone's work out there, and you know, they just do top notch work, and then you know, it's one thing to find that, and then very often, you know, that saying, you know, never meet your heroes. Well, very often, you know, you meet people that produce excellent work, and they're just, you know, they're either, maybe their attention is just divided and they don't even mean to be rude to you, but you know, you finally meet them face to face, and the meeting as well is less than you expected, and it's not that case with Mike. I've very seldom met an activist than a scholar who's more down to earth and more sincere, and I mean, like, sincerely interested in like how you as an individual are doing than Mike. So that's the guy we're here in the studio with tonight. And Ike is going to be spearheading the interview for him. So that's going to be some exciting stuff. And before we do that, though, I wanted to introduce Tom to you guys a little bit. And Tom, as we mentioned earlier in the show, is probably most well-known. I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But as far as I know, he's most well-known in our circles for his book, Hellstorm, which Kyle Hunt and Renegade News did, or Renegade News / Renegade Radio did a film adaptation of some time back, one of the few documentaries that I can honestly say I actually couldn't finish it. I mean, it just got so heavy. I got to the last 15 or 20 minutes, and it was like, okay, I think I got it, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, this is the work for which he's probably most well-known in our circles, but the guy's actually a very prolific writer, and he's got quite a background. And so I just wanted to introduce him a little bit to you now before Ike goes into interviewing him. And Tom was born and raised in Kansas. He served during the Vietnam War. He graduated from Washburn University, where he majored in history. And Tom has written over a dozen books and hundreds of articles. Before he wrote Hellstorm and joined the white nationalist movement writ large, he was a guest on scores of radio talk shows promoting his earlier works. Many of those programs served some of the largest markets in the U.S., including WBAL, which is the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, the KSFO, San Francisco area. And additionally, he appeared as a guest in many documentary films that actually aired on PBS, as well as the Discovery History Channel and the National Geographic channels. So he's been a featured speaker on C-SPAN several times, and he's addressed numerous historical groups, service clubs, and symposiums from coast to coast. So this guy's not just a dissident for the radical right. This guy has a bona fide background in academic research, and we're on the air with him here tonight. Tom, are you here with us?
Yes, Jacob. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Yes, sir. And we're just thrilled to be on air with you. As I was saying, Ike is here with us, and he's going to be spearheading this interview. So with that, I'm going to pass the ball to him. Go right ahead, Ike.
Tom, how are you this evening? It's good to be with you.
Very good, sir. It's good hearing your voice again. We had a good time the last time I was on. Ike, am I coming through loud and clear or a bit weak?
I'm able to understand you. Your volume does seem a little bit low, but I can hear you and understand you just fine, Tom.
How would the listening audience be taking us? Difficult to hear because
I'm going to assume that it's probably coming across with just about the volume that I'm picking up. And as I said, I can hear you and understand you just fine.
Sounds great on my end as well.
Tom, since we last spoke, I reread Hellstorm. I went in and actually read JCS 1067 and the Morgenthau Plan. It had been years since I had read the text of those documents. I read a couple of books on the economic miracle that was performed in Germany in the 30s, and I've been looking forward to this conversation for a few weeks now. How would you like to dive into the topic? Your book is an excellent, excellent resource for anybody who wants to understand how Germany was attempted to be murdered after the Second World War. But it's a complex topic with a lot of facets to it, I think.
Yeah, I did get a chance to listen to some of your chat back and forth in the first hour. And you were bringing up points. In fact, I admitted to you in the last time we were on Eddie's program here, Blood River, that I'm an expert in this book, but you're an expert in the war in general. And I'll bow to you anytime on various facts, components that I know little about. But I noticed you were talking about basically the projection of Allied war crimes onto the defeated Germans, of course, after the war. And that's what happens when you lose a war, like World War II. You not only receive a devastating defeat, but you're virtually enslaved. And everything that was done against you can be projected back onto you once more. And that's been the case, of course, with Germany for the past 70-some years. The crimes that were committed against Germany, now supposedly the Germans committed those crimes themselves. And that's false. Germany lived up to the Geneva Convention as well as any nation involved, in fact, better than almost all of them. I can't think of another nation that did better. Its war was carried on in a very humane way, despite propaganda today, far better than the Allies, and certainly better than the Soviet Union and the Americans. And yet, when you lose a war like this, you become the most demonized nation and people on Earth. That's what happens when you lose a war. I think Hellstorm, the great virtue, I think, of Hellstorm is that it shows you exactly what happened to the Germans and Germany, not only during the last stages of the war, but the immediate post-war years. And it, I think it not only gives you a true understanding of what really happened in that war, what was done to the Germans, but it tells you a lot about our world today also, our world in general, and how deceptive and ugly and vicious it is. And it continues to this very day, too. And by the way, the United States government is, in my opinion, the greatest war criminal the world has ever known. The nation, the government, that is. I'm not talking about the people. But our nation is involved in some of the most demonic, devilish type of operations of any nation I've ever read about. Any nation I've ever researched. And we're doing it to this very day also, of course, in the Middle East, around the world, trying to stoke a war with Iran, just bending over backwards day and night, 24/7, to try to cause a war with Iran. Of course, it isn't an American war. No war in recent memory has been an American war. It's been a Jewish war. Been a war for the Jewish power grid in the world. And that's the way it continues to this very day. Of course, 9/11 was a false flag that stoked countless Middle East wars that continue to this very day. And now the final object is in sight, that is Iran. And so...
Pick this up after the post, Tom.
Yep. Tom, we'll be... sorry to interrupt you guys. Off to a great start here. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Tune right in for some more exciting radio here on Blood River Radio.
Kosher, certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying shh? Let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this, the Kosher-tified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior. thekosherquestion.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, folks, we are back on Blood River Radio with a very exciting interview with Tom Goodrich. Now, just a little clarification here, and Ike reminded me via message when we went on break. Ike was like, is it Mike or Tom? And because it dawned on me, he's like, wait a minute, have I been calling Mike and Tom on air? And there's a reason for that. It's not because I'm mixing up his name. Our guest's name is actually Michael Thomas Goodrich, and I remember a conversation I was having with him on Skype one day, and I asked him, is it Mike or Tom? Which should I call you? And Mike, or Tom, was like, well, just call me whichever one you want. I can call both. So do clarify for us, Mike/Tom, if there's one you prefer to go by. But that's why you're hearing two names for him on here tonight.
Well, let's just go with Sir today. How about that?
All right.
No, I grew up known as Mike, and I prefer that to this day. And why I took the name Thomas for writing, I suppose it's like anybody who changes their name, you know, they go to the middle name, whatever. I guess I was like everybody else, just trying to unload a big load of baggage from, you know, my youth and intemperate days, let's put it that way. And that's probably all that was. But now it's back to Mike. Hey, I've got to say a couple of things before we go any further. I want to thank Eddie for having me on again. I'm not sure why he's doing this, but I want to thank him for inviting me back to Blood River Radio. And Jacob, of course, yes, we've known each other now via cyberspace, which is a great way to know one another anymore. I've known you for a couple of years, and you're doing a great job, my man. And Sam, you're a great referee, too. Ike, as always, yes. But I've got to say this about Paul English before I go any further. How appropriate, Paul English, from England, of course.
Yeah.
Paul, when he began talking with you guys today, it was 11 o'clock in the UK. So, you know, it's hard to imagine. Here we are sitting with the sun going down in the eastern part of the United States. And Paul, it's almost midnight over there. So this man does, despite his old age, almost 60 now, he does a pretty good job. But Paul, Paul's most recent activity, that I know of anyway, it has been the narration of the Hellstorm audiobook. And Paul has been on that for roughly 8-9 months, and he finally finished it 2 weeks ago, and it's now up for sale. You know, it's a big deal to me, and I think it's a big deal to a lot of people who appreciate the book Hellstorm, because we all know that it does take work to read a book. It's it takes a lot of time, takes a lot of good eyesight, and some of the things that we have of neither of those. like myself. But Paul has now put this into a wonderful audio book. I call Paul the golden voice of Great Britain. I think you guys could tell from just a little bit you talked with him that this man has an incredible voice.
You know, Mike, I made a comment strong, in the first hour when we were discussing the audiobook of Hellstorm.
Yet passionate and very professional voice when he's working on the audiobook of Hellstorm. But I think Paul is going to make this book accessible to many, many more people than normally we would expect, you know, who would pick up a book, read it. Now they can just simply listen to the book. By the way, I've got to get a plug in here. For Paul and I, we're in this together, but that audiobook is now for sale for about $20, $19.95, simply by typing in hellstormaudiobook.com. People can, they can go on there and simply purchase the book, or if they want a free sample, they can click a link and it will give them the prologue for free. So anybody listening who prefers to listen to a book, this is a good opportunity, I think. But Paul has become a great friend of mine, and hopefully we'll be involved in a few other things. But guys, Ike, I just want to say, I don't know if I answered your last question very well, but Hellstorm, I've had a lot of nice reviews from people who have read the book. And one thing that does stick out fairly consistently is people tell me that not only are they finally learning the truth about World War II, and it has totally changed the way they look at that war, but they also say things like, it's also changed the way I look at the world.
That's right.
And I hope, you know, that's a really nice thing for an author to hear, because that's what the book was intended for. It was to show the world what a lie he's been forced to swallow all these years, now over 70 years. And if they're lying about something so great as World War II, what else are they lying about? Was it 9/11? Was this a false flag operation, which we all know it was, but most people still now are wondering. And I think that's the great virtue of the book, is that it raises so many other questions about the lies they have told us. And by the way, speaking of lies, another great lie was Pearl Harbor, of course, and FDR and his Jewish advisors and their constant instigation to stoke a war, a false flag at the Pearl Harbor. And that's another great lie. Of course, that's part and parcel to World War II, the American participation in World War II. And I did just finish a recent book which does address that, among other things. It's called Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. And you might notice by that subtitle, I'm including Germany and Japan together, because what Japan received was not much of any better than what Germany received during World War II. And I think anyone who reads that book will appreciate exactly what I'm saying. And America was doing some really devilish things back then. I know there are probably a lot of people whose fathers, grandfathers fought in World War II, and they heard the stories, and they probably think I'm a blasphemer, that I'm a liar, that I must just be making this stuff up. Well, I had two fathers who fought in World War II, by the way. One, a biological father who was an island-hopping Marine in the Pacific War against Japan, and the other, a man who was in the U.S. Air Corps, Air Force, at that time, fighting in Europe against the Germans. And so I probably got I've got enough dogs in this fight that I can stand up for my fathers. Yes, they didn't know any better. They believed the propaganda just like every other American. And so they dutifully went off to war and fought the good war and came back known as the greatest generation. But interestingly enough, just like many other people, neither one of them talked about it. Neither one of them mentioned much about it. You know, you've heard those stories about Uncle Fred when he came back from the war and the kids and the aunts and the uncles wanted him to talk about the war he was in. Uncle Fred clams up, doesn't say a thing. He refuses to talk anymore about it. And everybody just dismissed that and saying, well, Uncle Fred probably saw a lot of terrible things. Since my research into the American participation in World War II, I'm sure Uncle Fred saw a lot of things, but I'm convinced that Uncle Fred probably did a lot of things too, that he's ashamed of, And once he became a man, that is a mature man with a full developed conscience and soul, he probably realizes the terrible things he did, and there was no way to make up for it, no way to apologize for it, no way to bring back the lives he may have snuffed out, may have shot in cold-blooded murder, or the women he may have raped because everybody else was raping them. Those are the things that Uncle Fred probably is not talking about, or at least that's why he's not talking about it, because of the terrible things he did. But anyway, I do go on, Ike, as you know. If there's any questions, I probably better go with that instead of just rambling on.
You make it very easy to interview you because you have a lot to say, and that's excellent for a radio program, I promise.
But, you know,
I was going to mention something a moment ago. I made a comment during the first hour when we were speaking with Paul. A book like yours, to be in yet another format, audiobook, is really significant because I've thought for a long time that our people, the great majority of our people, at the very least, can be awakened. And we know what awakened means. You know, we call it J-woke. It encompasses quite a lot. And your book, Mike, is a huge part in that because this whole narrative of the greatest generation and the whole narrative of the great crusade winning the war, well, you know, there was a quote at the beginning of a movie some years ago that history is written by those who hang heroes. We'll talk more after the post.
Yep, hold that thought 1 second, guys. That's our cue for the break. So all you out there in radio land, tune in after these messages.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has reversed course and now says he will no longer travel to Ukraine to push for that country to investigate Democratic presidential contender Joe Biden. Giuliani told Fox News the meeting would have accomplished little and may be in the hands of those who might misrepresent it.
I will get out of it in order to remove any political suggestion.
Okay.
I will step back. And I'll just watch it unfold.
The news came hours after Trump had told Politico in an interview that he planned to speak with Giuliani about the trip. In Washington State, parents can no longer claim a personal or philosophical reason for not having their children vaccinated for measles before attending school. Washington Governor Jay Inslee signed the bill yesterday.
What we need to do in the state of Washington is make decisions based on science. We have to do it based on medicine. And we have to do it based on public health to help all of our children.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, healthcare, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your healthcare. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year. A month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
President Donald Trump is getting some praise from Democrat Dan Kildee, Chief Deputy Whip of the Democratic Caucus, for holding firm for structural substantive changes in trade with China.
They have held firm so far, and I want to encourage the president, hold the line. The tariffs, I'm not sure, are the right approach because, again, we're often hitting the wrong targets. But hold firm on this fundamental question of insisting on reform.
Kildee made his comments on Fox News. Gunmen forced their way into the five-star Pearl Continental Hotel in Pakistan today. Journalist Ben Farmer tells CNN gunfire could be heard.
It's a big hotel in Gwadar. Now, Gwadar is a very strategically important port, and it's the focal point of an enormous amount of Chinese investment in Pakistan at the moment. So there will be a lot of Chinese business people there. There may also also be tourists there. It's really a very, very important port city for Pakistan.
This is USA Radio News.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had lessons.
All right, folks, we are back tonight on Blood River Radio with people who, unlike those in that audio clip you were just hearing, have flown before, at least in the radio capacity. We are here live with Tom Goodrich and, of course, Ike Baker, and these guys are going to pick right back up with this fascinating interview they've been going on with.
You know, Mike, what I was saying right before the post was that quote was from the beginning of Braveheart, which I don't really go for many movies, but that was one that grabbed me because of my Scottish background, and that was one of the opening lines from the narrator at the beginning, that history is written by those who hang heroes. And that's what was done after the Nuremberg kangaroo trials. And if people can be awakened and have the light shined on this, I think most people, that's subjective, but most people are willing to see the truth when it's put right in front of them. And one other thing I wanted to mention in the same vein, I bought a book on Kindle this week. I couldn't bring myself to buy it physically. That Germany Must Perish, written by Theodor Kaufmann back in 1941. He was self-published. These people have a pure and perfect hate for our people. And with Germany being fairly well neutered, that hate is now on white Christian men who will not lay down for them.
Well, I totally agree. Yes, and we can witness it all around us, Ike. This war, it's going on. In fact, it's increasing. There's no doubt about it. You can see it if you just watch a couple of hours of TV at night. You can see the Jewish advertising. Advertising is almost entirely Jewish. It's something called Madison Avenue, but almost everything you see, well, let's put it this way. If you were a stranger to this country and you came in and you stopped at the first place you had a hotel room, you watched the TV, you would assume that America is probably about 90% black. Not just 90% black, mm-hmm. but 90% healthy, athletic, intelligent, good-looking, black people running around. And the other 10% of the population, according to these commercials, would be incompetent, dysfunctional, white people, especially white men, doing stupid things, dumb things, ignorant things. You would never imagine that what the true demographics are in this country, or that these bumbling idiots that they portray as white people, especially white men, these are the people who gave us virtually everything: automobiles, airplanes, space shuttles, computers, virtually everything. But no, they're portrayed as people that you wouldn't want to be associated with, white men in general. And that's part of the war, as far as I'm concerned. This incredible anti-white hatred that Jews feel for us. It's visible everywhere in pornography. It's visible in academia, where we have actual Jewish professors now calling for white extermination and not being fired, or actually, in the case of one, actually being fired, but being kicked upstairs to a better paying job. This is going on, of course, in the government, especially in Washington, the government there. We can see it any time of day, anywhere. And that's simply a continuation of World War II, in my opinion. No, when they destroyed Germany, and when I say they. I mean Jews. Yes, the Allies were right behind them, and all they had to do was kick them in the butts and put out enough propaganda to convince them that they were fighting the good war. Yes, to take out Germany, the leading nation in the world at the time. No doubt, the leading nation in Europe that other nations looked to for leadership. Destroy Germany utterly. That was part of the war against the rest of us. Now we're seeing the chickens come home, and we're seeing what's happening in the rest of Europe right now. The nations that actually fought against Germany, they're going through the same thing, France, Belgium. And so, yes, this hatred, once you see it, once you recognize it, it's an incredible hatred. It's something that, well, let me say this. Unlike you, Ike, you did were raised. I listened to your little bit of autobiography there. You were raised in a very intelligent, seeing household. I was not. I was raised in a household that believed what they saw when Walter Cronkite talked about what's really going on in the world, according to him and CBS. I believed all that nonsense until I was in my mid-20s, at least. So I had to do like most people. I had to learn from scratch and from hard reality, too, I might add. But I think there's a value in that in itself, because there's a lot of people out there like me that once they find out they've been lied to, we're almost remorseless in our enmity toward the creatures who create the lies.
That's right.
There is no give up in me, I swear. Until the day I die, I will fight this this evil that seems to have taken over the world. But
Mike, it gives my life purpose to fight this.
Yes, frankly. Yes. And there were times in my life, don't forget, I'm a historian. I love the 19th century. I love I love studying about the Indian Wars, the Civil War, the people, the gunfighters, the Wild Bill Hickoks and Buffalo Bills. There were times when I wished I'd been born in another era, the 19th century, but not recently, not in the last 10 years. I'm so glad that I'm able to help my brothers and sisters fight this evil that's in the world. I wouldn't trade places now for any time, any place, or anyone, quite honestly.
We have the opportunity to be the greatest generation of white men who ever lived. And by the way, I bought Scalp Dance last week, Mike. I haven't gotten into it yet because I was boning up for this interview. But I have Scalp Dance sitting on my desk, and that'll be the next thing I read.
Well, it won't be Dances with Wolves. It won't be Little Big Man. It won't be Soldier Blue. It'll be as honestly and accurately as I could have written and researched that book. And that's why the book is still around. You know, like especially to you, this will be important. I think one of my best books, certainly not my best-selling, but one of my best all-time books, was something called The Day Dixie Died, Southern Occupation, 1865-1866.
Reconstruction.
That book was the American version of Hellstorm.
Right.
As preposterous that may sound to some people who have read Hellstorm, you know, how can America have something like that? Well, we did. When the South was defeated, yes, we did. And it wasn't to the extent, of course, of what happened to Germany. But the degree and some of the things that occurred were very similar to it. But the book, I won't go much further than that, except we have starvation, we have rape, we have murder, we have massacre, we have all sorts of bad things against the defeated enemy, just as the Allies treated the Germans. In this case, it was the Confederacy. Somebody, a nation who wanted to be a nation. People of their own, with safety, the book did not do well for a couple of reasons. First reason was the book came out, I think it was 2 days before 9/11, and that was it. My then wife and I, we had planned a real strong publicity campaign throughout the South. We were speaking to a lot of groups, SCV groups, history groups, genealogy groups. After 9/11, nobody was reading books. Nobody wanted to hear about books. They wanted to see the TV. They wanted to see the war that was going on in Afghanistan and then later Iraq. The book never recovered. That's the book I'm talking about, The Day Dixie Died. Still, to this very day, it's the only book of mine that was never translated or turned into a paperback. Every other book I've got out there was a hardback and then a paperback. This book is still available, but only on Kindle, not a paperback, not the hardbacks, I guess, that can be bought.
Look it up on Amazon while you were speaking, and it is out there. It is available on Kindle, and they're offering it used, which I know it's not the same for you as an author, but they are offering hardback copies used anywhere from $6 to $18, I'm sure, depending on the condition. I'm going to pick that book up next week, sir.
Well, it's the best I could do. And in fact, almost every page of that was a revelation to me, because quite honestly, I didn't know how poorly, how badly, how viciously the South was treated after Appomattox. And I did make one comment in there. I generally don't do this in any book I write, but I said something toward the end of the book that the South was never, during the war, there was a lot of contention among Southerners, a lot of disagreement, a lot of arguments about the way the war was going, about what the war should be really for. Mm-hmm. But that all ended, of course, with defeat. And then once they went through Yankee occupation and the things I've just mentioned about the rapes, the starvation, the murders, and the humiliation, degradation of the South.
I'm going to ask you a question about that book when we come back from
the
break,
South,
okay?
Then the South became very solid.
Yep, that's our cue for another break, gentlemen, if you can hold those thoughts for a moment. Folks, tune back in after these messages. We'll be right back with Mike and Ike with some more exciting interviewing going on.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
All right, folks, we are back from a break, and hopefully we are making your day with this fantastic interview with Mike and Ike. Now, these guys have been dealing with some rather controversial but exceedingly relevant truth about our history and the lies we have been told about it. Perhaps it's not as sweet to some as the popular candy by the same name, but it's far less damaging to your teeth and infinitely more enriching to your mind. But that being said, we are in the last 15 minutes of this show. I know, it's very sad. I'm suppressing the tears over here. I really am. So with that in mind, gentlemen, if you would keep in mind as you're interviewing here, let's make the most of this time and make sure we cover whatever Mike, you know, wants to get out there to the audience in regards to promoting his books and stuff like that, in addition to you guys carrying on with the excellent conversation you're having.
You know what? What you just said goes directly to what I'd like to say first. Mike, Reconstruction, to use the popular term, nothing was reconstructed. That was our hellstorm here on the North American continent. I had a dear friend from north of the Mason-Dixon line ask me why all these years later the South still hates. And I explained Reconstruction to her, and she understood it. Sir, would you be willing to consider relaunching The Day Dixie Died?
I have contacted the publisher, a mainstream publisher, and I get silence generally. The last time I contacted them about a paperback, there seemed to be some hope. She said that the editor, that is, said that she'll look into it, and that was seven, 8 months ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not optimistic. It is a devastating book. There's no doubt about it, the things that are in that book. My then wife at the time, she and I, I cannot tell you the number of states and state archives and even county and local archives we went through to find out exactly what was going on in that particular area. A lot of folks have this Moonlight and Magnolia nonsense in their head about Robert E. Lee and Grant shaking hands, and that was it. And we got busy bringing back the South with lots of money and lots of energy and lots of help there to bring it back. That's nonsense, at least in that first year. Now, I qualify that. All I'm covering is the first year after the war, the first year of so-called peace. And honestly, it was not peace. It was war by another name. And punishment, let's put it, after Lincoln was killed, yes, it was all about punishment and grinding the South down so that there was never an ounce of pride left in the South. Very similar to what happened to Germany. And that may sound to a lot of folks today, especially in the South, as hyperbole, over-the-top generalization. I don't think so. I've read too many diaries and too many letters of people back and forth. I've heard too many conversations that were recorded later about what really happened. And it was a very brutal time. Similar, virtually everything that was done to Germany, it seemed, was done to the South after the war. Is this intentional hiding of the truth after all these years. Now, there have been some other books, though, that I'm not going to go into right now that did talk about it, but they're, like my book, they were fairly marginalized. But that's, that's where the curiosity gene comes from. I found an account, what started me on the book The Day Dixie Died, of a woman who was forced, or rather the Yankees were going to force her to show mourning for Lincoln after his assassination. And of course, that was going on throughout the South. They not only had to celebrate by showing happiness after Lee surrendered, but when Lincoln was murdered, assassinated, they had to show grief. If you can imagine this in a defeated nation, well, this proud lady refused. She said, "What? You're asking me to show black on my home after you have killed my husband and my only child, son?" And she refused to do it. And they said, "If you don't, we're just going to, you know, raise holy hell with you and all of your neighbors." So what she did was she said, "Well, go across the street and I'll break out the black and I'll adorn my upstairs veranda." Well, she went upstairs and they waited. And then when they finally saw her again, she was on the veranda and she stepped up on the railing and she put something around her neck and she jumped off. It was black crepe veil. And she hung herself right in front of them. I saw that, Ike, and I thought, there may be more to this story than we've been told. And that's prompted me to start working on The Day Dixie Died.
Let me broach something with you right here.
Of course, it got vastly worse than that. But that's just one example.
Let me broach something with you, Mike, if I may. If I can convince Eddie and the producers of this show to devote a segment on the program to the day Dixie died, I'll buy the book next week. I'm going to do that in any event. I'll read the book. I'll become conversant in the subject matter. Would you be willing to come back on the show and talk about the day Dixie died, sir?
Sure. I certainly would. And after you've read the book, you'll be more refreshed than I am as far as what's in it. But I also did a rather something of a follow-up book after that. That is available in paper, and it's called The Darkest Dawn, Lincoln, Booth, and the Great American Tragedy. And it does talk about many of the things I mentioned in The Day Dixie Died, especially the reaction of Lincoln's assassination, not only in the North and the West, but especially in the South, what the South was going through. So I did have a chance to talk about it again in another book. But yes, of course I would be. I'd be honored okay. to be on the program with you, Ike.
I enjoy conversing with you. I'm sure you and I could sit down with a pot of coffee and while away an afternoon talking about the things dear to our hearts. But in the interim, we'll do it on the radio if you're agreeable to it.
Hey, don't you guys dare do that or without calling me first, because I want to be in on that too.
And hey, Mike, I want to broach something slightly off topic. I mentioned it to you last time, right as the final break was starting. I'm able to speak it to a limited capacity on behalf of the president of the League of the South, Dr. Michael Hill. He's a dear friend and my the chief of my organization. I'm one of his staff officers. I'd like you to consider coming to our conference the weekend after Labor Day in Alabama. If you're the least bit agreeable to it, I'll secure an official invitation to you, sir.
Well, I would love to. Let's just work it out.
Okay.
I can give you my address after the okay. program. Or you have my phone number, and by the way, I do have League of the South on my links. I have at thomasgoodrich.com, I've got my own website.
Right.
I'm not doing much on it, but the League of the South is one of my links among many. But sure, we can go through the station here, and we can set that up. That's Labor Day, that's September. Yep, I should be
sure.
around.
Eddie's a member of the League. I don't know for sure if you are or not, Jacob, but if you're not, you should be.
Dr. Hill invited me, and I'll say here what I said to him. I was very honored by the invitation, and there's a part of me that there's so many organizations I'd be a card-carrying member of if I
sure.
could. But
sure.
The way I work with numerous folks in the movement, I honestly feel like I can do more for all these organizations by not being a card-carrying member. But I consider myself an honorary member. If you guys,
oh, buddy, brother, Eddie, let me tell you what. You marched up Market Street with us in Charlottesville, with us, with the League. You're one of us.
Well, thank you. Now, okay, so we're moving up on the 5-minute mark, gentlemen. So what sort of things would you like our audience to know about you, Mike, with that in mind and this painfully limited window of time we got left on this show here tonight?
I'd like to make a comment about a lady who's going through a lot of turmoil right now, a lot of problems. Her name is her radio name is Georgia Peach, and she's had a very popular program out in Santa Cruz, California, on KSCO, and her Jewish boss just fired her the other day because Georgia spoke her mind. She did not toe the party line, and he fired her not because of lack of popularity, quite the opposite. He fired her clearly for political reasons. There's no doubt about it. Well, Georgia, she's going through some problems right now, of course. She needs to be on another radio system, another broadcasting system, quite honestly. She is that good. She's got a wonderful way of saying things. She's very quick-witted and intelligent. And I'm trying to find a lawyer that can go to bat for her out in California right now, because Georgia's got some real issues with this station, not just because she was fired. There are some issues I won't go into right now. But Georgia thinks she's got a very strong case, and let's face it, there's something that's so despicable about just firing somebody who was bringing in lots of listeners, who was doing good work. I can understand, okay, it's his station, he can do what he wants, I guess, but I think there's certain laws with the FCC that you cannot just simply do things like this. And that's what we need a lawyer for, is to investigate a little bit and set Georgia at peace, to let her know what she can and cannot do. But Georgia, she'll be on Dennis Fetcho's program next week from Amman, Jordan. Dennis is a good friend of mine on Inside the Eye Live. And from what I heard today on his program, she'll be on next week. So if any of your listeners want to pick up Georgia,
Mike, I enjoyed this thoroughly. I look forward to being with you on the air again.
Thanks so much, man.
Well, folks, our time is up for the night. You have been on air with Michael Thomas Goodrich, Ike Baker, and Jacob Tyler filling in for Eddie Miller. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Thank you for listening to Blood River Radio. Please consider supporting our endeavors so that we can keep doing the work that we're doing. And God bless each and every one of you, and you folks have a fantastic night.